You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bob-apedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in four fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a seven-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bob-apedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 285 on this Thursday, July 16th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Brody Lusk with you. 50 days from kickoff. Exactly. 5-0. We're getting somewhere. We're continuing to look ahead to the season. We're going to do some schedule talk today. What's Oklahoma's toughest game? What's the most important game? Over-under on the win total. We'll discuss all those things. We'll also look ahead to media days next week out in Tampa. Oklahoma has their three player reps that will be joining Brent Venables. We'll discuss all that, set the table for media days. I'll also put a bow on the MLB draft over the weekend as well. So it's a kind of busy, packed a little bit. Thursday show, plenty to talk about, plenty to get to, and we'll do so on the program today. A reminder, though, before we get started, you can subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60, all one word, for listening on podcast. That'll get you a 60% discount to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network, for a full calendar year. Take advantage of it. Be with us every single day, the two of us, Tom Green, and obviously our full wide panel of 24/7 sports experts that you'll have access to year round. Take advantage of it. Be with us every single day. All right, Brody, let's get into it. Yeah, 50 days from kick. I figured let's do a little schedule talk. I mean, we've kind of done the last couple of weeks between you and I and Tom. Certainly, we've done a lot of roster talk and kind of, you know, biggest X factors. Last week, you and I talked about some players that have had good summers, created some buzz. Let's kind of get into the games a little bit and kind of look ahead to how this season's going to kind of shape out as we map this thing out a little bit. First off, this before we get any specifics, this schedule in relation to last year, more difficult, less difficult? I feel like on paper it feels less difficult to me, but it's still considered by almost everyone to be among the very hardest in the sport.
Yeah.
I'm going to handicap that first. So like the level of difficulty for this thing whenever it does get started here in a couple of months.
I think it's so different because last year it felt like really their toughest games were going to be that stretch where they went to Tennessee and then went to Alabama.
Yeah,
and this year.
Yeah.
Yes, and this year it's like, well, you got the game against UTEP, then you go to Michigan, you have a tune-up game against New Mexico, then you go to Georgia, right? And then Texas is right around the corner. It feels like those three games are so early. Close,
yeah.
All early. I would probably lean towards you and say that like it last year's was a little more difficult, I feel like, but I don't think it's a huge gap. And I think that, you know, all things considered, this still is a difficult schedule. I think the way it's constructed, you have a lot of your toughest games early. You look back into the schedule, you know, A&M at home's not going to be easy. Ole Miss at home's not going to be easy. So, I think tough schedule, but I would probably say last year's is slightly more difficult.
Yeah, it is funny because, you know, third year in the SEC, it does kind of feel like this is the first year Oklahoma has a little bit of a break where they get like Kentucky at home, right? I mean, they have a couple of SEC.
Mississippi State.
Mississippi State. I mean, could be a tricky game, but certainly compared to some of the other places you could go, not bad. But it's still, by any metric, considered obviously one of the toughest in the country, but also just within the league. I mean, it's most rankings or metrics or whatever have it like the second or third, maybe even first hardest schedule in the SEC. It's kind of crazy. It just goes to show how tough what they've had the first 2 years has been. I mean, it's been brutal. Last year was a gauntlet, especially that November with those road games. But they found a way to obviously play their way through it. So we'll see what they can do, this time around, third time around.
Yeah, I think if like Florida is actually good this year,
that's a big one.
First year under John Sumrall, I think that kind of changes a lot of it because that one – I believe the schedule on that, the timing is a flex as well, so that if they were good, that could be a night game, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like that, if they're good, that's going to be tough going into the swamp. I think that changes it for me. You know, a mediocre Florida versus a decent Florida or a good Florida, I think would change how difficult this schedule is by a decent amount.
No, that's a good call because that's the other thing is that last year going into the year, we honestly thought it might be even harder than it actually ended up being because it was like, whoa, LSU coming and them not being quite the team we thought they would be, you know, but still obviously brutal. It's very unforgiving. The SEC is what you signed up for. On that note, let's get into some of the specifics of it. Just curious, first off, though, right out there off the top, what's the toughest game on this thing? I mean, we just mentioned a couple that are sneaky. I mean, you certainly, I think, whenever you're talking about the most difficult game, toughest, whatever, you certainly look at the road games, right? I mean, I think that's where people would go. They have a couple, two, three. If you loop in Florida, even throw in like a Starkville, should be tricky. They have some rough road games again. Now, they went to Knoxville and won last year. They went to Tuscaloosa and won last year. So they can win on the road. Part of that is obviously the way they play. Defense travels, which is an old, you know, cliche. For you, though, what's the toughest game on here? I feel like there's a pretty obvious choice, or are you getting crazy with it? What's the toughest game in your mind on this thing?
I got to go with at Georgia.
It's at Georgia.
And, you know, there's a part where I considered Texas, but I think you got to go at Georgia. That to me, that's the toughest game, especially if that one ends up being the 5-7 kick.
Would that game, in your mind, if you know, obviously we get the whole season and context matters, but would that be the most impressive win of the Brent Venables era if they go win that in Athens for you?
I think so. If they win at Michigan, I think so. I thought like Alabama was super impressive last year, just coming off like they did against Tennessee. Are they going to do it again against Alabama?
Yeah.
But I think this would be different. Like you had that season last year where you went and won those road games. Like, okay, Brent Venables, you know, he can do it at Oklahoma. This team can make the playoffs. This year, I feel like a win at Georgia would more so be, all right, you could go as far as you want to go this season, right? I mean, they could legitimately be a threat to make the national championship. They win at Georgia and then take care of business the rest of the schedule. And, you know, you're looking at how high they would be ranked if you win at Michigan and win at Georgia.
Yeah.
Like, you're going into the Texas game.
Top three, probably.
Yeah. Have to be. So I think it would be just because, I mean, it's Georgia at Georgia. Gunnar Stockton's back for them. Like, going in there and winning that would be super impressive. Super impressive. I think, yeah, most impressive win.
Yeah, I agree. It has to be the toughest game. I mean, it's on the road. It's the SEC opener. It's against the, you know, SEC favorite, a team that's considered a national title favorite, one of the favorites, obviously, in Georgia. I think a more interesting convo is maybe what the next one would be. I feel like it's probably between Michigan and Texas, right? I mean, Texas is certainly better than Michigan, but that is a neutral site. In your mind, going to Ann Arbor or Texas in a neutral site, tricky.
Yeah, very tricky. And I think one more thing I'll add about Georgia. I just been thinking about, you know, they play the week three, they play a SEC game at Arkansas, but their first like true big home game, the Tennessee State, Western Kentucky, Arkansas, then OU. Their first like big home game is that OU game. I think that also to me adds into it. It's, you know, I think it's going to be crazy down there. But as far as where I would go next, I have so many questions about Michigan, just first season under Kyle Whittingham. What does Bryce Underwood look like? I think you can kind of see that he has the tools to be a really, really good quarterback, but what does it look like? They have, you know, good run game, I think, in Jordan Marshall, and there's a freshman running back they have that, you know, he seems pretty solid too. I would have to go Texas. I think the second one for me, just because that just feels like one that you have to win. But I don't know. It also, Michigan, big noon kick in the big house. That's going to be super tough on the road. First true. I don't know. I feel like you could go either which way here.
For sure. I probably would lean Texas, I guess, just because I feel like Texas is going to be really good. Like you said, some fair questions about Michigan, Kyle Whittingham taking over. Don't really know how good Bryce Underwood is, but that is a true road game.
Yes.
In front of over 100,000 people. Like that is, you know, worth noting, obviously. Yep. I mean, the road games on here are, like we said, we don't really know what Florida's going to be, but that is the swamp. That is a tough and kind of underrated is like, what's the weather going to be like? Is it going to be like really hot in November? I mean, you know, OU Oklahoma will not have been playing in that. That could be a factor. Who knows? Maybe it ends up not being like that. You never know. But that's an interesting little wrinkle. And then, like, you know, going to Starkville, going to Columbia again, which obviously had the all-time nightmares a couple of years ago. Like, you know, there's some tough road games on here. I mean, everywhere in the SEC is tough on the road, obviously. And it's no different this year for Oklahoma. They have a brutal road slate again this season. So we'll see.
Yeah, Mississippi State. I mean, like you mentioned, I think it was a tricky game. Both Tennessee and Texas, if I remember correctly, went in there last year, and Mississippi State didn't beat either of them, but they played them really close. I think Tennessee. I remember watching that game. I think that was during OU's bye week. That game went down, I think, overtime to the – like, they played them close. And I know last year, you know, Jeff Lebby and them didn't have the wins to kind of show – but they were improved. I think that they would have enough to give OU a scare in that game, you know, with the cowbells and everything. It seems like just a weird game, you know. But they have Kamario Taylor, Anthony Evans. Seems like Zion Reagans is going to play for them this year. They have a good running back in Fluff Bothwell. So maybe they'll be – someone who can put up a fight for a little while. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think one of those games, Mississippi State, Florida, Missouri, will end up being tougher than we anticipated it being, you know, right now. Just maybe one of those teams is better than we thought. Maybe Florida. So we'll see.
So I figure we'd be in total agreement there. Going to Athens, toughest game. There's a lot of tough games on here, but that one just is it's a cut above. I mean, again, SEC favorite on the road. Certainly one of the national title favorites, one of the gold standard programs going on the road early in the year, too, in September, going out there to Athens, SEC opener. Maybe a tougher question, what's the most important game? Now, this is obviously nuanced to it. You could take a lot of directions. Is it more of like within the confines of the season and what it would mean, or like a bigger picture talking point?
Yeah.
For you, most important, if you could right now, you know, guarantee Oklahoma wins – this game for their season, which one would you pick? Basically, I there's a few because that Georgia game is one of them, right? I mean, if you told me right now Oklahoma wins at Georgia, and we just said it'd be probably the most impressive win of the Brent Venables era. And I don't really see a world where OU wins in Athens that they don't win 10 plus games and go to the playoff.
Right. Like,
that's basically an automatic almost at that point, barring disaster, right? That you do what you want to do. For you though, most important game. What's the one that OU needs to win this year? Where does your mind go first?
Well, I think first it has to be Texas. Like that, to me, that's my answer.
A better showing against Texas.
Just because of what's happened in years past, I feel like they need to just win that game. Beat Texas, beat your rival, put up a fight. You know, like I think that they need to win that game. Part of me would also like think about Michigan, like, starting the year with that win, on the road in Ann Arbor, I think would really set the tone for the year. Versus if you lose that game, you know, you're in a different spot. If you win, you can go into the Georgia and Texas game, the next two games, and say, hey, if we can split, win one in Georgia or win against Texas and still lose at Georgia, you're still in a good spot. I think I would go Texas, though. It's kind of just because of everything that happened last year, and I just think they need to go win in Texas or win against Texas. To me, that'd be the most important one.
I remember having this same conversation with Tom last year on the show, and I think last time I did go with Michigan for a very similar reason why you could go for it this time, because it just felt like so early in the year that was going to be a tone setter game for the season to go win. And it's a similar thing this year. It's a flip in that you're going to Ann Arbor. Last year really felt like if you lose to Michigan at home in week two, like I don't know how this is all going to go, but they held the business. They really dominated that game. And that did kind of set the tone for the season. That was when we really knew like, oh, this defense is good, like really good. And you obviously saw the flashes with Mateer and stuff like that. And so you started to think big, like this team could be really something special this year. It's a similar feeling this year going up to Ann Arbor. You know, not that the season is cooked if they don't win up there in Michigan, but you're not feeling great. I mean, you have to go to Georgia 2 weeks later. Like you're kind of already a little bit in panic mode, frankly, if you lose in Ann Arbor in week two. So I'm tempted to say it again, but I think I have to agree with you that it is Texas. I just when you use the context of what has happened in that game, I mean, they haven't scored a touchdown in the last 2 years. I mean, it's been ugly. It's been really ugly. And to get beat the way they did again last year was just such a punch in the face. And, you know, you're in the same boat. You know, I'm just sick of walking out of there feeling like they're so far apart when they shouldn't be, you know? And so it just feels like if you polled OU fans, like what's the one game that you could guarantee a win this year that you would take? I feel like without a question, it would be Tech. Like you just – OU fans need it really bad. The program does. Yeah. The program's in a great place. It's on the rise. It went to the playoff last year. There's a lot of good momentum. But the one thing that's kind of hanging over Brent Venables, frankly, right now is that they've sucked against Texas. I mean, they had one win under Brent, and it was an all-time win, but it was an all-time game, right? I mean, it took a drive late, Dylan Gabriel, all that. And they've gotten whipped in the other ones. Like, they need a good showing.
Need a win.
I think that is, without question, the most important game. Because even if they go 10-2 again and go to the playoff, but they lose to Texas again and they lose by multiple scores, that's going to leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth again. Like, they have to get over that hump. They just have to.
Yeah. Here's a question that I've been kind of trying to think about recently. How much does just being there for that Tennessee game and the Alabama game and seeing the way that this team really embraced the road dogs mentality, went on the road and kind of just won both those games, does that kind of skew in your mind like how you think they'll perform on the road against the Michigan or against the Georgia? Like, oh, we've seen them go on the road and win games like this. To me, I kind of sometimes there's thought of that. Like, I kind of think OU would go on the road and steal a win like that. I could totally see it. Do you feel like that kind of plays into a factor in the way you look at these road games?
Yeah, it totally does for me. I mean, you know, you're missing some of those guys. You don't have like a Grayson Halton or some of these dudes who are really, really extra crazy, but you still have Kip Lewis and you still have that mentality is still there. Taylor Wine was a big one. Like, I feel like this team, because we had seen it, it's a different team, but it's also not at the same time. Like, it's a lot of the same dudes that, and we mentioned earlier, it's an old cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason that defense does travel. And I think that even in that Texas game last year, you know, the defense came out and looked amazing in the first half. They just kind of ran out of gas because the offense wasn't giving them anything. And so, I mean, when you have a defense the way that they had last year and what I think we're all in agreement will be a really good again, you kind of do feel like you can go on the road. And also, too, not for nothing, and they won those games with defense, and the defense is why they went to the playoff. But, like, John Mateer made some big plays in those games on the road. And
he did.
He's kind of shown, you know, face, you know, against those crowds in Knoxville and Tuscaloosa that he has an ability to rise to the moment. There were some moments where he really delivered in those games. Was he perfect? Obviously not. But, like, he had some moments, too, and had some big throws. And so, I mean, I feel like they've proven what they did last year that, hey, they can go win in an Ann Arbor the swamp or whatever. Like, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, and I feel like I never talk about this, but having Tate Sandell back, a kicker that you know is going to be able to go get you points on the road in an environment like that. Exactly. I mean, that was the Tate Sandell and Owen Heineke legacy game. I mean, they were both incredible in that game. Right. But just having a kicker that it's so underrated to go like against Michigan, and you can be confident that he'll go out there and make a field goal for you. So I just think seeing what this team did on the road last season, like the Eli Bowen pick six and just these different moments that we saw, especially like you mentioned, Mateer made some plays, Xavier Robinson in that Tennessee game. So I think that does give me like even more confidence that like, I don't think OU is just going to go get hammered on the road against the Georgia. I think that that's going to be a game. And I think Oklahoma does really have a chance to win that game. I think most important one would be Texas. But I definitely think seeing what they've done on the road last year, at least for me, gives me some more added confidence with these guys coming back.
I'll never forget in Knoxville last year, which was an all-time. I mean, it was unbelievable. During one of the timeouts, I think it was in the fourth quarter, where Kip Lewis is just running around the field while they're
yep.
having the huddle, and like the lights are all orangey and it's dark.
Yeah.
I've said it before, he's a complete psychopath. And I mean that.
Yes. In the best way possible.
Yes. Like he's a maniac. He's insane. He's a truly insane person, which you kind of have to be a linebacker in the SEC as good as he is.
And yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how he, Taylor Wine and all those guys, Danny Okoye, I mean, how all those guys embrace those road at, I mean,
yeah,
right out of the gates in week two. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That game at Tennessee was just the way it was structured. Like OU was coming out of the tunnel right by the Tennessee student section. I remember just Grayson Halton and Kip Lewis just going at the student section, chirping them the whole time after halftime. Yeah. Like that was incredible. The whole team, just the way they showed up in that one. That's why I'm excited to see Ann Arbor and how this team really embraces it the way they did last year. I think it'll be fun to watch, and especially like looking at it, Georgia, that could be one that we could be going into that one and like, man, this is a huge game, especially if you go on the road and win at Ann Arbor. So it'd be huge. But yeah, I like the way the schedule is this year. I think there's like we're going Michigan, Georgia right off, you know, the first four games. I think that's incredible.
So to tie this up, to kind of put a bow on it, over under for Oklahoma is only set at 7.5. That's what I believe FanDuel is what they has them at. I believe all the books are probably pretty consistent with that. CBS Sports had a big list of all the win totals. They're all via FanDuel. Oklahoma was at 7.5. You can go look at the full list. It's on the website over there, CBS Sports. You know, we're both going over. Right. It seems kind of crazily low. This is where it's hard, though, because, you know, we're in the Oklahoma bubble. Right. We're around the program all the time. We're talking about the program all the time. And it's for us, it seems like a no brainer. Like if they're going to win at least 8 games. Right. I mean, frankly, if this was 8.5, I would still go over.
Yeah.
Still going over. Why do you think it is so low? I mean, because is it just we're too close to it, so we can't. I mean, they did go 6-7 2 years ago, and they did. I mean, if you want to poke holes, I mean, I guess you could say, like, nationally, if you're looking at this Oklahoma team from afar without getting any sort of like specifics, you could say, like, oh, they won some crazy games in November last year. You know, they won 6 games the year before, kind of betting on them to not pull out those close games this time, I guess. But 7.5 still seems low.
7.5 is so low. And that's what I was going to ask you is like, what, like, paint the, like what's the scenario that they go under?
Losses is a lot.
It's a lot. Like you would have to have a John Mateer injury, I would think.
Yeah.
If you're going to go under, I mean, because you're looking at 5 losses: Michigan, Georgia, Texas, and then where are the other two? Florida. And I just don't think this team loses that much on the road. You know, so I think the national perception of John Mateer doesn't help this. People forget what he was. You know, he was a Heisman favorite before the injury.
After September, he was like the favorite. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, maybe this just comes down to, do you believe that John Mateer is going to turn it around and be back to what he once was? Or do you think that, you know, the injury really didn't have a huge effect on the way he was playing? I think 7.5 is really low. I think the line should be 9.5. But 8.5, I think, would be, hey, I would still go over, but that to me would make more sense. I don't know if we're too close, like you said, but just with this defense, David Stone, Kip Lewis, Owen Heineke, Jaden Jackson, I don't see where this defense lets them lose 5 games. That to me, I don't. And I think this offense, quite frankly, you can't be much worse than you were last season. I think that they have to improve. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was surprising to see the number be where it is. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see what happens when the games start. But, you know, this is why I'm very interested, too, with media days being next week. We're going to get this, obviously, very soon. The preseason poll in the SEC, specifically the league one. Obviously, the AP poll, that'll come out in the middle of August. They'll be somewhere, if I had to guess, in the 11 to 15 range. That's just what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But the SEC preseason poll, which will be voted on next week at Media Days, and they'll release it later next week, maybe early the week after. Like, where do they land on that? Because I would think they're going to be in, like, after Texas, Georgia, probably maybe, like, an Ole Miss. Like, they're kind of right in that group right there to, like, be anywhere between, like, 4, 5, 6. But if, you know, 7.5 wins would suggest more toward the middle. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm curious. Not that the preseason polls mean anything. It's just content for us to talk about in July. But, you know, I'm a little curious where they're going to land on that thing, because it would seem, if this is any indicator where the win total is, to be a little bit of an indication that, like, maybe the public perception is that Oklahoma is not going to be that good, which for us seems kind of crazy. Like, we
it seems crazy.
Total. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think with the SEC, I see it as, like, two tiers this year. I think you have, like, Texas, Georgia, Ole Miss, LSU, A&M, OU, Alabama, and then kind of everyone else. Like, I'm not too high on Tennessee, Missouri, Florida, South Carolina, Auburn, that group. So, I mean, where does Oklahoma land in that top seven? You mentioned Texas, Georgia, Ole Miss, A&M. Does LSU go ahead of Oklahoma? Does the Lane Kiffin hype put them ahead of Oklahoma in the preseason poll? I could see it. What about Alabama? I mean, they have a ton of you don't know what their quarterback is going to look like with the Keelan Russell, Austin Mack battle. I think Oklahoma should be at five or six, but like this over under 7.5 win total would lead me to believe that would have to put them 7, 8.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's interesting.
Definitely going to be interesting. And we'll get some of that stuff next week with media days coming up. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this. It's a fun schedule. It's a fun schedule, like we said off the top. It's very different than last year because it's kind of more front-loaded. It feels like if you can get through that Texas game and you only have one loss, if you're 4-1, you're feeling like you're in phenomenal shape.
Have to be.
Not that the rest of the schedule is like layups by any means. You still have some really tough games, but you just feel really good about where you're at. The fact that Texas A&M comes to Norman, Ole Miss comes to Norman. You do have some tricky road games, like we said, but – you know, your biggest games the rest of the way are going to be at home. And so it's an interesting schedule. It's very front-loaded this time, which is the complete opposite of what we're kind of used to. Even going back to the Big 12, it was always back-loaded. It was always November was all the big games were. Now this year, it's kind of more in September and early October. Like, we're going to have a pretty good idea of where this team sits by the middle of the season, for sure.
Do you like this schedule better than last season? I mean, I think last season was a little weird. You had the Michigan game and then the Temple road game. And then coming back for the Auburn game. Do you prefer this front-loaded schedule more towards last year, where it's like all year we're kind of looking towards those Tennessee and Alabama games?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I like having the really big game early, which they had last year. I like getting into it and getting a big game out of the gates. Kind of wish Georgia was maybe later in the year, but I'm good with it. I'm good with jumping into the deep end of the pool. You know, I don't mind it from our perspective. It gets going. Now, what will suck is if they lose a couple of these things and you're having to saddle with 2-3 losses all year, that's where it can kind of backfire on you. But, you know, you think back to like 2021 Oklahoma Lincoln Riley's last year, where they were 8-0 or 9-0, and we still didn't really know how good they were because they just hadn't, they kind of been skating by all year. They won the Texas game that year, but. You know, they were kind of just skating by kind of mediocre Big 12 teams all year. Like, it's kind of just better. Like, let's just get some bigger. Like, if they're 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, like, they're good. Like, there's really not going to be any question about it. It's going to be just a matter of, like, where they end up. But we'll know pretty quick how good they are. There's not going to be any secrets.
And nine conference games this year instead of 8. I like that there's no Kent State. There's no Maine. You know, you're every week after – I mean, it feels like you just have the UTEP and New Mexico game, and then you're playing someone. I mean, you are every other week, so I like that. There's no Kent State game. That game sucked last year, but yeah. So, and they posted the themes for the every game. Right. I think this week the Kentucky game will be the throwback game. Yeah,
Kentucky, I think it was.
Yep.
And then they didn't announce this. The military appreciation game is Ole Miss. which is typically when they've worn the unities. But they did not say that. So they're now, I know fans are kind of split on them. A lot of people don't like them. They are undefeated in them for whatever right. that's worth. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to wear them again against Ole Miss. I feel like they're going to. I feel like the players like them.
The players seem to like them. I'll say an interesting, like, I found this interesting. I was looking at the College Football 27 EA Sports game. You know, OU has to submit their uniforms there. It said, it didn't say Unity uniforms. It said 2025 Unity uniforms. So I'm not sure if this is going to be discontinued or anything. This would be the last year. But, yeah, I found that interesting when they posted the military. It did not say Unity games. So yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, I could see it. I could also not. That would be a crazy uniform matchup. OU and the Unity versus whatever Ole Miss is going to wear. Yeah.
It would be. I look forward. We're 50 days out. Looking forward to it.
The Sooners Illustrated podcast will be back after this short break.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Kind of one of those things that makes it feel like we're getting closer. In fact, the media days is next week. I fear we'll look ahead to it a little bit.
Yeah. You
know, in Tampa next week, media start on Monday. Oklahoma is right out of the gates. They are on Monday, the first day, so we don't have to wait around long. Brent Venables obviously will be there to represent Oklahoma. John Mateer, not a shocker. Taylor Wine, pretty, you know, expected name there. Third guy, Eddie Pierre-Louis, offensive lineman, going to make the trip. Not a name that I think we would have pulled. Tom and I were kind of speculating on this a couple weeks ago, like throwing out some names of who we thought. I mean, Alex Mateer was a layup. Taylor Wine was a very, like, possible, likely name. But I think with all the defensive veterans, you know, Kip Lewis, Peyton Bowen, even maybe David Eli Stone. Bowen, you know, David Stone, I think we all kind of were thinking that direction. But they go offense, and they go Eddie Pierre-Louis on the offensive line to media days next week. Anything you're looking forward to media days? And what's your – does talking anything with the fact that EPL gets the invite? Is that – does that mean anything for you? Does that move the needle at all for you?
Yeah, I just posted a story about this. I think it's really interesting. Like, if you were – I would have been surprised that they would have taken two offensive guys versus one – like, versus two defensive guys. I would have thought it would have been, like, David Stone, Taylor Wine, John Mateer, or Kip Lewis, Taylor Wine, John Mateer. Like, the fact that they're going with two offensive guys I think is interesting. Yeah. And then if it was an offensive guy, you would have thought – first thought would have to be Isaiah Satania as another one. I mean, we know this. Like, Isaiah Satania is not really a great – interview with talker. The media, not a huge talker. So I guess that makes sense. But to go EPL, I mean, as a redshirt sophomore, he's not an upperclassman. You know, he hasn't started a full season. Like, he's from Tampa, but I think to me this is interesting because it could signal that, like, he's a leader on this offensive line and they're confident in EPL. I don't think Brent Venables is the coach to just send someone just because he's from Tampa. It seems like everything he's done throughout his tenure in Norman has been very, you know, he has a reason for all these leadership things. So I think it's interesting. Yeah. I would like say it's a good sign for EPL. You know, even if he's not Oklahoma's best offensive lineman, they need that vocal leader on that offensive line. Last year was Fabetchi Wiwu. He's gone. Now, can that be EPL? Certainly seems like that's what this indicates. So I think it's a good sign for him. And I think it's definitely interesting. Like, he probably wouldn't have been in my top seven guesses for that third spot. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. Like, you don't want to overstate it. It's just media days, but it doesn't mean nothing. You know, I think there's some significance to it. Like you said, I do think Brent Venables is pretty, you know, deliberate, you know, with these sort of things. Like, I feel like And like you said, he is from Tampa, so I'm sure that helps sweeten the pot a little bit. But I'm sure that with what he's done in the summer and going back to the spring, and what he obviously did the tail end of last season, going all the way back to then, like this is a little bit of a kind of half a reward slash half a you're going to go represent the offensive line and the offense out there, like kind of like putting it on him. Like,
yeah,
you're going to go out there and you're going to represent us. You know, you're going to go and be on the guys. And so I think it is kind of a good sign for EPL. And obviously he's a guy that played good football at the end of last year and the whole offensive line did. And that's a group that's expected to be pretty good. And just in general, the fact that they're sending an offensive lineman period, even removing the specifics of who it is, seems like a pretty good sign for how Brent feels about his offensive line group. I have to think that you're feeling a little shaky about it, that you probably don't send someone.
Right.
So that's kind of a nice little vote of confidence as well. So I do think it, you know, again, you don't want to overstate too much, like, oh, this guy's going to be, you know,
yeah,
in America this year. But, he, you know, it doesn't mean nothing. There's something to it.
I think it's also interesting, too, because if I were to think of one thing that, like, Eddie Pierre-Louis has consistently brought to the table, it's got to be physicality. He was always very physical. He always gave 100% effort, like no matter what. That was one thing you could not critique about him last season once he got playing. So I think that maybe this is a way for Oklahoma to signal to their whole offensive line, like, hey, this is the guy that's going to set the tone for this group, right? He has the effort. He has the physicality. This is who's going to set the tone for this offensive line. I think that could play into it as well. Like you said, you know, I don't think Eddie Pierre-Louis is going to be the best offensive lineman on this team. But if that's your vocal leader and that's who's going to set the tone physically, I think it's very interesting that he got selected for this. I was surprised when that came out. He was not who I was expecting to see on that graphic at all.
No, pretty cool thing. Yep. As far as the other guys, you know, I am kind of looking forward for Brent and Taylor Wine too. I mean, Taylor is a guy who is a good, you know, he's a veteran leader, one of those vocal voices on the team defense.
He's a good interview too.
Good interview. He talked about back in the spring about kind of calling on some of the younger guys to kind of step up. I'm curious to hear from both Brent and Wine in that area of like who they choose to kind of highlight, you know, young defensive guys, you know, because we talk about it, right? I mean, what made them so good last year was the depth, having so many guys you could rotate in and not miss a beat. And we feel like that depth is in a pretty good spot again. But you're going to need some young guys to kind of pop and to jump up. We talked about that last week. Like some of these defensive tackles, maybe a couple of these edge guys, certainly one of these younger linebackers maybe. Like who does Brent Venables and, again, Taylor Wine to an extent choose to kind of bring up? And because, again, we've gotten to cover Brent for a while now. Like he doesn't really blow smoke on these sort of things.
Yeah.
He kind of is a pretty straight shooter with like, if he's giving a guy a lot of shine and pumping a guy up outside of just like mentioning their name or throwing it out there, but like really like giving compliments for Tor, it's usually warranted and for good reason. So just interested. We haven't really heard from Brent like in official capacity, obviously really since spring. He talked at spring meetings, obviously back in May, but you know, who he kind of chooses to point out of like this guy, watch out for Omarion Robinson or something like that.
Right.
That'll catch my eye on Monday if we get some of that.
Well, and it's interesting because that guy last year was Taylor Wine.
That's right.
And and R. Mason Thomas was sent to media days last year, and he was really the first player to start getting on that Taylor Wine hype train. It was Taylor Wine last year was the talk of media days, I thought. Fall camp as well. So it's going to be interesting. You know, now Taylor Wine is going to media days, and who can be in a way their next Taylor Wine, a player that you're not really expecting to be a huge contributor that actually ends up being one. And you know, Venables, he hyped up Taylor Wine last year, and it was deserved. You could see it from the start that he was going to be really good.
You know who else falls in that category last year as well that got a lot of pump at media days from Brent Venables was Courtland Guillory,
and again,
another one. As a freshman who, you know, got a lot of pump, and you don't know, right? You don't know. Like,
yeah.
You know, Sean, but like, you know, is this guy really going to play? Like, I don't know. And then he obviously ended up being awesome. I mean, he was a huge part of it as a freshman last year. So,
right.
That's another one.
That Michigan game, you know, because I'm trying to remember, wasn't Eli Bowen out to start the year or was it Gentry Williams? Eli Bowen.
You missed the first game.
He missed the first month. And so, you know, Guillory got in there a lot in that Michigan game. And I was like, this guy's going to have to start when Bowen comes back. Like someone has to not start because he was so good. So I'm curious, you know, who, yeah, these next guys are. And especially as we get into fall camp, you know, one, you want to hope that this team stays healthy. But you know, who are going to be the guys to step up when an injury happens? I think that that's going to be, to me, the most interesting thing at media days to follow. Cause I think a lot of the questions are going to be, you know, about this offense, about Ben Arbuckle in year two and John Mateer and obviously the hand. But to me, I think I'm mostly looking for like, who are these younger guys that we can expect to step up?
Yeah, I agree totally. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to media days. You know, it's one of those kind of just tent poles of the off season is when you kind of really feel like you're getting somewhere when you get to media days. And so that's next week. Starts on Monday. Runs all week. But obviously, again, Oklahoma is on Monday. Tom is going to be out there, boots on the ground in Florida, in Tampa. They'll have lots of coverage, obviously, over on Sooners Illustrated. We'll also have lots of coverage on the YouTube channel. I'll be just pumping out videos from Brent Venables and the three players. We'll have tons of coverage. We'll keep you posted. Everything worth knowing coming out of Tampa. And obviously, we'll have a podcast. It'll be Tuesday next week. We'll wait a day, obviously, with them talking on Monday. Well, Tom and I will circle back on Tuesday, and we'll kind of recap it all and what stuck out to us from media days on Monday. So just feels good. Yeah. Just feels good. We're getting closer. We're 50 days out. And again, media days is just kind of one of those things that it feels like, all right, it's starting to feel real a little bit. Like football is approaching. Football's approaching.
Yeah. It hasn't been a ton going on recently, but you did have MLB draft this past week. We haven't gone over that. You had 8 Sooners selected in the draft, the first one being Brendan Brock to your Yankees. So what do you think about these Sooners that got selected? Kind of what are your thoughts on where they went and some of the, you know, who got drafted, who didn't?
Yeah, tidying up the MLB draft for sure. Glad you brought it up. Good draft for Oklahoma in both ways. It's kind of rare that you can toe the line of kind of it being a productive draft for like a recruiting tool. If like look at all these guys, but also you got some key names back, starting with, you know, the guys that did go, like I said, Brendan Brock was first off the board, goes number 99 overall to the Yankees. Good for him. Really athletic guy, knew he'd be a relatively early round pick. And he was. Jackson Willits goes to the Angels, which is really cool. That's where his dad plays. Yep. That's a fun thing as well. Those were 2 of 8 guys that went off the board for Oklahoma, which was among the most. I think it was like tied for 5th or 4th most of any school. I want to say something like that. Among the most. I mean, only a handful of schools had more than 8. So nice recruiting tool for Oklahoma there to send that many guys to the pros and get drafted off of obviously their national championship winning team. And on the flip side, though, at that same time, while you had a lot of guys and you're feeling good about that, you got some key guys back. I mentioned it with Tom last week going into the draft that the key names to watch for me were Jason Walk, Desaun Harris, maybe Camden Johnson, who did get drafted, I believe, in the 9th round. But like Walk and Harris were 2 that I really wasn't sure about, like where they would land. Could they get those guys to come back? And they did. Both guys go unselected. Now, obviously, it's always kind of a fine line because we don't know the intricacies of at what point were they telling teams not to take them because they weren't going to return. But at the end of the day, bottom line, they don't get drafted. They don't. Nobody picks them. And they're going to make it back to school, which is obviously huge. Both guys were awesome in their run to the national championship. Both guys were really good in Omaha. And you take those 2 guys plus Jay Abernathy, transfer from Tennessee. If that's your outfield, that is an incredibly athletic outfield. Like, it really, really dynamic and it cover a lot of ground out there. And so, look, I mean, offensively, we talked about it, you know, pretty openly. Like, they're going to have to replace a lot of their lineup from last year that won the title, but not as much now. I mean, for a minute, it was looking like it was going to kind of be Kyle Branch, and that's probably it. Now you also have Jason Walk. You also have Desaun Harris. The new 5-for-5 rule has made things kind of interesting with a guy like a Dayton Taki potentially maybe getting another year. That's something that's kind of been floating around. Don't know the specifics or the likelihood of that, but like you look up and you may have – you're going to have to replace some huge – I mean, Jackson Willits is gone, Dayton LaChance. Like big names are going to be gone. Both what they did in the portal and then what they did in the draft here, not bad. I think realistic to be pretty excited. And also, too, worth noting, at the high school level, they had a couple guys go. Savion Sims, fully expected. Josiah Kemp got taken. Jack Brunner, catcher, got taken. But a couple other their top guys in their class did not. Anthony Del Angel and Jason Amalbear. These are 2 of the top guys in their 26 class are going to make it to college, which is very exciting because it, you know, you kind of thought there was a chance that you might not ever get to see them in Norman, and they're going to make it. And also their portal class too. I mean, not for nothing, but Sebastian Pizzicretta, the Pittsburgh catcher. He makes it to college, or makes it to OU, I should say. He was draft eligible from Pittsburgh. He's coming to Norman. Cameron Yurtsu, the JUCO guy, had the crazy numbers that Tom and I talked about a week or two ago. He's going to make it to OU. Like, the draft was pretty kind to OU. If you ask me if I feel better or worse about the 27 team after the draft, it's definitely better because they got some key guys that were kind of on the fence to come back. So, good draft for Oklahoma, and a lot to be excited about. I think, you know, we're really far away from it. Obviously, we've got a whole football season in basketball, but I feel like next February when the season gets rolling, I think they'll probably be a top 15-ish team, if I had to guess. I mean, who knows, right? Obviously, we'll see how the fall shakes out and whatnot, but this should be a pretty good team. And I didn't even mention Gavin Jones and Jason Bowden both back in the bullpen as well. Those are both guys who also easily could have been drafted that are going to make it back and are going to be kind of key pieces in the bullpen. So, I mean, bottom line, you have your full rotation. You have at least the framework of a pretty good bullpen lineup that you're going to have to replace some key bats. You're getting some back, and you've done a great job in the portal. I think, you know, good team on paper, good, exciting team. And not that I'm guaranteeing that they're going to go back to Omaha and try to win it again, but they should have a roster that's capable of winning a lot of games again next year. So that's exciting for fans, obviously.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 5 for 5 and everything that's going on with that in college sports. I think it's really crazy. You know, if you could add like a Dayton Talkie back because of this 5 for 5, it I don't know what's all going to happen with that. From covering basketball, like it's really, really very interesting in the college basketball space.
Well, it's great for seniors too, because like you have to kind of, I think, apply for a waiver.
You do,
because like I got asked that a lot, like, because obviously Dayton Talkie and Trey Gamble were the two seniors last year who were both great in the lineup, and it was like, could they get a fifth year? And I was like, my answer is basically like, I think so. I think they have to apply. It's all murky, but
yes,
it's something to keep an eye on. If that's the way, that would obviously be very, very interesting if that were to shake out way.
I think in hindsight, the NCAA should have probably just grandfathered these guys in, because I think they're just going to be eligible one way or another. But it's I've been told it's just different than like the Diego Pavia deal. Once he got it, everyone else they were fine. JUCO guys in the same situation that year were good to play. But this, I've been told, it's different. Like, every player has to individually file for that lawsuit to be eligible. So it's different. It's not like one thing passing is going to just make everyone eligible. You have to go do it yourself. I don't know. Like, I know with basketball, they're looking to add two more contributors. Like, you could bring a Tay Davis back if this passes. It could be huge, because you could bring, I mean, Peyton Bowen would have another year if, you know, and I think he would likely go to the draft, and he would have a year. PJ Adebowore would have a year. Jacoby Johnson, like some of these guys, you know, those guys will get it since they're obviously eligible right now. But you look at the guys for basketball, it's crazy. And baseball too. It's very interesting time in college sports with this going on currently.
No doubt. It'll be really interesting to see how it shakes out. But bottom line, towards the draft, good stuff for Oklahoma there. I thought I had the key thing moved. Good stuff for Oklahoma for sure. And it was pretty kind to OU for sure.
Yep.
All right, I think that's it. Good stuff. You know, we're doing a look ahead. We're 7 weeks from tomorrow is the opener. Fall camp is just a few weeks away. Media days next week, though. That's the next big thing. Obviously, everyone enjoy their weekend. And again, Monday, full coverage. Be on the website, oklahoma247sports.com, Sooners Illustrated. And of course, here on the YouTube channel, if you're watching the pod on YouTube right now, well, this is where you can find Brent Venables, the three players. I'll be pumping it out all day. And Tom is out there in Florida, so he'll have the boots on the ground coverage. And we'll wrap it all up on Tuesday on the show. Like, we'll have you full covered on the media days, both again on the website and over on the YouTube channel. But that's it for now. Appreciate you being tuned in as always. For Brody Lusk, I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you next time right back here as always on Sooners Illustrated.